We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go. What's up, guys? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show number 211. Andrew is up in Vermont right now. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties, so you got me running the show, doing the intro for the first time in a very long time. Andrew, how is the weather up in Vermont?
Well, the weather is pretty good. It's actually supposed to be pretty warm, which is weird for this time of year. But I think what we should do is we should tweet out that picture of me and this bootleg setup we've got in the corner of the bed and breakfast that I'm staying at.
It looks like you're sitting in a chair from like 1973.
Yeah, it smells like 1973 too.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup you got going on, that's for sure.
That's what I do for this show. I rain, sleet, or snow, whatever it is, what I'm dealing with. No Wi-Fi. I'm on my girlfriend's work Wi-Fi hotspot right now, trying to come at you guys here.
Yeah. So full disclosure, we have tried Skype like 15 times through an actual Wi-Fi connection. Not so good. Didn't work so well. So now we're on a hotspot on the cell phone using Skype. So we have a digital signal to try to improve it as much as we possibly can. We'll see how good I can get this in post. And see if we can actually edit it to something that's listenable. So, but hey, we got it in, right?
Yeah. The good news is, though, we've got Brian Hoke coming up later in the show, which I talked to him a few days ago. So that part will be fully professional, that part of the episode.
Very professional, as always. Yeah. So Brian Hoke is joining us. And good news about Brian Hoke, we have some, this is breaking news, I guess. He's going to be one of our first reoccurring guests this season. We've talked with him, and we're actually going to have him come on, you know, at least once a month throughout the season. So we'll be able to get his perspective and things. All Yankees, obviously, he is the MLB Yankees guy for MLB.com. He's the one that runs it. So he's got a lot of good insight. I think Brian does a very good job. He's doing some video stuff now. He actually he's running a podcast as well, basically for MLB and the Yankees. So I'm excited about that.
Me too. Yeah, Brian was great. And we talked to him at some point last summer, and he was one of my favorite guests that we had on last summer. Not that the rest of them weren't good as well, but I also talked to Brian about his book coming up, The Baby Bombers, which I think our listeners just have a hunch that our listeners might be interested in that book.
Yeah, definitely. Before we start getting into some of the topics, just want to go quickly over these events. We've actually had some changes because the Yankees have announced their promotion schedule. I'm sure everybody saw it last week. The big one that they were promoting really was the Aaron Judge bobblehead with the May the 4th be with you, and it was him, as you know, dressed in like an Obi-Wan robe. So that's a big one. But they've made some. So they announced this, and this is like double, triple, top secret before the Yankees announce their promotion schedules. Like, there's a lot of people within the Yankees that don't even know about this. So I think what we're doing actually is we're going to be tweaking some of the games that we're having this year for the event towards the end of the season. Hopefully this doesn't screw anybody up, but it's going to be some of the later games. But I think this is adding just a much better element. Actually, I'm pumped up because we're able to now get around. With these events, we're able to do two more like big time events at Yankee Stadium. So obviously the first one's April 7th. That one's locked up. May 26th, locked up. Those first two are locked up. They're on sale in the fan shop. Go check them out. The next one, June 29th, is a Friday night at Boston. That one's not changing. That one's locked up. Then the July and August games are the two that we're very much thinking about swapping, and it's really only a week off, but I think we are going to make these changes. Is July 22nd is going to be the new date, and that's actually going to be a Sunday night ESPN game against the Mets, Subway Series against the Mets. I think that is a very, very obvious choice to switch that up. The inventory is there for us. We're able to get our section 205 and 206. So I think that's what we're going to be doing. July 22nd is that change, if you're noting that. And then the second one is the second change is going to be August 18th, would be changed from the 11th date was when we originally had it. And August 18th, if that date rings a bell, it's because it's the 20-year 1998 celebration. And that's a 1 o'clock game right now. On August 18th. So that is a cool thing because what we can do is back in the 2016, we did 20 years breakfast beers for 20 years for the 96 guys. And now we could do it for the 98 guys. So I think it's a logical change.
And we're going to be doing it for the 99 guys and the 2000 guys, the 2009 guys. And maybe, I don't want to jinx anything.
Don't do it. Don't even say it.
2038, maybe.
We're hoping that our kids are going to be putting together some 20-year anniversaries down the line. Yeah.
Right.
September 15th versus Toronto is the last date. That's the original thing, original date in September that we had. So that one is not changing. So keep an eye out for that. I'm actually going to put together an entire post on Bronx Pinstripes this week that outlines everything about it. And then you're going to start seeing more of these events popping up on the fan shop for you to purchase the tickets. A quick note on the fan shop. We got two new t-shirts that are out. Definitely go check them out. Modern Day Murderers Row shirt, which is badass. Shout out to Brian Begley, who is a huge Yankees fan in Jersey. He's a phenomenal illustrator. And he and I kind of collaborated on that one, but he was the illustrator that did the majority of that shirt. And then the second shirt in the fan shop right now is In Cashman We Trust. I teased this, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? This was kind of my little secret, double secret private project. I love it. I'm very happy with the way it came out. It's one of my favorite shirts. And it's if you haven't recognized it, people are like, he's got too much hair. I'm like, no, he doesn't. He doesn't have too much hair. It's Brian Cashman in 1998 when everybody knows that gif of him like giving the double thumbs up to the dugout. That's him.
Yeah.
So
that was it's an ode to the 98 right
Yankees too.
I think that gif is like right after Scott Brosius hit one of his home runs off Trevor Hoffman.
Yeah, so it's a perfect gif. It's used all the time. It's perfect because one, this is his 20th year. It's the the first championship for him as general manager. He has a ring from 96, clearly wearing it in the t-shirt and in the gif. So those are the two new additions to the fan shop. Plus, we're adding a whole bunch of new stuff as far as sizes, like kid size. I just had a kid, obviously, so I got to add kid sizes. I mean, that makes sense. I have to clothe my child. So we said
there's plenty of baby Yankee fans out there.
Yeah, he's gonna get some gear from the fan shop. So it's kind of all the housekeeping we have. We can get right into the topics. Obviously, we got some people throwing some grown men throwing balls back and forth. Beautiful stuff. Pitchers and catchers. We got some big boys arriving with Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton coming into camp. So things are starting to happen.
Does it get you juiced up when the players arrive before they actually have to? Does it make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside?
Well, it makes me feel like they care even just a little bit more. It makes me feel like they've missed their boys. And then Stanton's case that he wanted to get there so badly, he had to come early to meet his new best friends. So I'm excited about that.
Isn't it funny how low we set the bar for professional athletes? It's like, just show up a day or two before you actually have to, and we will love you.
Yeah. No, it's they have a very, but then again, when they're in the season, the bar is extremely high. And if they suck, then we're killing them. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, as fans, and you and I have mentioned this a million times, we want our players to care as much as we care as fans, or at least show that you care. A lot. It's the players that act like they don't give a shit. Those are the guys that piss us off.
That's the thing. When you're in this game as a fan and you're so emotionally devoted to this, you got to see that type of devotion from the guys that you're rooting for. Because if you see any kind of, and I'm really glad actually that we don't have very many guys that have like the Jay Cutler face, you know what I mean? Like the face of a guy that just doesn't care at all on the field. Like if we had one of those guys, it would drive me insane. And maybe Chase Headley was that for you, but none of the guys had been like that for me.
There's a few other reasons for that. What about Robbie Cano though? Because people always complain that Robbie Cano did not act like he was showing enough hustle sometimes and that sort of thing. But that was kind of just his way of playing. He was so smooth. He was as smooth as butter out there. So that's, I think, why it was that way for Cano.
Yeah, and I don't really think he gave the impression, like, it's more the facial expressions for me. It's like, if Jay Cutler's a perfect example. Like, that guy really looks like he doesn't give a shit at all. Like, doesn't care, like, one bit. Looks like he jumped off the couch. No, it looks like he slowly moved off the couch and then, like, barely walked into the game and just started playing. It, like, doesn't care. I don't feel like there's anybody like that on the team.
No. And I think that this, like, when you have a team full of young guys who have come up together, they're the core of the team, that energizes even maybe some of the older guys that might not have as much passion as they did 10, 15 years ago. And I think CeCe has talked about that a bunch. CeCe, I think, is one of the perfect team leaders. Couldn't pick a better guy, at least to be leading the pitching staff. But I remember last year he was mentioning in a lot of press conferences and a lot of different things that he was doing where the young guys energized the older guys, and that's what carried the team throughout the season.
Yeah, and I think we first saw that within this, you know, the last 5 or 6 years of the Yankees was the first time really was when A-Rod went on that tear. And what year was that, 2016? 2015, yeah, when they had that run towards the end. And we had guys like J.R. Murphy going out and like being the boy wonder. He was like a, you know, the kid in a, mm-hmm. was like a fraternity kid out there. Like that was the type of stuff. And they were talking about how it just absolutely, you know, gets them going. And I think that's a real thing. It's absolutely a real thing. And maybe now that I'm thinking about it, Jacoby Ellsbury does have that face. So,
well, Jacoby Ellsbury, what is he?
I don't even consider him a guy on this team anymore though. But he is. He's there.
Well, you're gonna realize he's there when he's taking up the fourth outfielder spot, and all we want to see is maybe Clint Frazier getting a shot.
Yeah,
Clint Frazier's been very confident. He's saying, I think, didn't he say a lot, I'm gonna surprise a lot of people when I'm coming into camp.
He's been sending out a ton of tweets, just basically backing up his confidence, saying that he's the guy. He knows he knows in his ability, and he knows that he's gonna perform well. So I hope he does. I really do. I hope he pushes the envelope.
One of the reporters asked him, did you keep a close eye on if you were going to get traded at all this offseason because your name was mentioned? And his answer was, I'm here now.
Yeah. And that's all that matters, right? That's all that matters. So
absolutely,
we'll see how he does. A couple things around the league. Before that, actually, did you hear about Thairo Estrada, who's one of the Yankees' minor league prospects, got shot in Venezuela? Looked like it was a robbery attempt, and dude got shot in the hip. Looks like he's going to be okay. He's in camp right now, and from what Aaron Boone was saying is that he'll be able to play the majority of the season. But when do people stop going back to Venezuela? Because the kidnappings and shootings, and like, it's a terrible place to be right now.
Yeah, I don't want to make, I mean, I laughed. I don't want to make a joke of anything. But if you're a professional baseball player, like, these teams got to be saying, listen, what do you need? We'll give it to you here. Do you need your family to come here? Don't go back there. It's clearly a dangerous place.
Yeah. Who was the catcher for the Nationals a couple of years ago? Who was the one who got kidnapped? Like that place is ridiculous. And if you have some money, they're targeting you, and it's a known thing. Like, get your family out. Don't go back. Let's just keep everybody out of Venezuela, please. But
didn't Miguel Cabrera also have a family issue down there last year?
Which was a kidnapping thing.
Yeah, I got chirped on Twitter during the Tigers-Yankees brawl, and I was saying that Miguel Cabrera started the fight, and then I got a couple Tigers fans chirping me like, you don't know what he's going through. You don't know what his family's going through back in Argentina. And I'm like, well, first of all, I don't know. I'm not a Tigers fan. And second of all, does that make it justified that he could pick a fight with Austin Romine and miss and whiff like Austin Romine, dodging punches like he's Floyd Mayweather?
Well, maybe that's why he missed. Maybe that's what they were. It's not so much that he started it, but like trying to give him an excuse for why he missed. I don't know. To me, that's not a logical reason for any of that.
Yeah.
But bottom line, don't go to Venezuela. And if you are from Venezuela, just invite your family to New York or Tampa.
I'll have to cancel my Venezuelan vacation.
All right. A couple things around the league. Like I was saying, Tampa is apparently having a fire sale for whatever they have left. I'm expecting Chris Archer to be gone soon, but they did some really weird things. Jake Odorizzi has been rumored in trades. Rosenthal was teasing that he was going to be dealt. He got dealt to the Twins. But I think the big head scratcher here is they made a deal for a guy from the Angels, a first baseman, and DFA'd Corey Dickerson as a corresponding move. And it looks like they're trying to work out a trade right now, which would, you know, get them back a draft pick as well, but a compensation pick. But Corey Dickerson was their all-star last year, one of their best players, and they just DFA him. It's very strange.
What do you think the 16 Tampa Bay Ray fans are saying right about now?
I don't know, but it's the one guy is the behind the plate making those annoying loud noises that you could hear because there's nobody else in the stadium. He's not happy. He can't be happy.
Like, is he the cowbell guy? Does he have the cowbell?
I don't think he's the cowbell. He's the one who just, he heckles people like super loud. And I don't know if it's just super loud or there's nobody in there and you can hear him so clearly, but he always picks one person and then goes after that guy like all game. It gets really annoying. And I think it's basically just the place is a ghost town.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're going to have to trade Archer because they could actually get a decent haul of prospects for Archer. I think Archer is a really good pitcher, and he's been pitching in the American League East, so you know he can do it against the toughest competition. in the toughest ballparks. They have to trade him at this point. But assuming they trade him, what are they going to win, 50 games next year?
I mean, again, like I was saying, I haven't counted how many are on the schedule. It's 18, 19. Is that what we're looking at? I want to win every single game. I do not want to lose one game to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. It doesn't make any sense.
20 out of 19 games.
I want them to win. And maybe a brawl, and then whoop their ass in a brawl too.
Maybe play like an 18 inning game and win that, so it's like they won two games.
Yeah, or yeah, just, you know, physically beat them up as well. Like there needs to be some ramifications for rolling this team out there. And one of them absolutely has to be getting swept by the New York Yankees. Like, the Yankees have to walk into every single game. Like, we cannot lose to these guys. They're a JV team. There's no reason for us to, they shouldn't score more than three runs in any game. So,
yeah, it's shaping up though between the Yankees and Red Sox, because those are the two strongest teams in the division. They're going to collect a lot of wins from the bottom teams in the division. I think Baltimore is going to be crappy too. I know they can still hit, but I don't see what they have. No pitching.
They just picked up Andrew Kashner, so they bolstered it a little bit.
I still think they're going to be looking them in Toronto. I just see this as a very top heavy division, but I see the top two teams, the Yankees and Red Sox, being strong.
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's going to be a two team race. Baltimore. I mean, the Kashner move is something to look at, but it's so typical of what Baltimore has done over the past couple of years. They pick up like a guy late in the free agent season, an arm that's like, he's like, you know, he's a 3-4 starter. Kashner doesn't strike anybody out anymore. He's been getting people out by contact, which is, you know, the anti Andrew Kashner from what he was in San Diego. So I'm wondering how that's actually going to work when he's pitching at home in Camden Yards, because the ball is going to leave the ballpark quite a bit if he's not striking people out. I don't know. It seems like one of those moves I think it's so clear that the Orioles missed their opportunity when they had a good team a couple of years ago. And now Machado's leaving and Britton is hurt to start the season. You know, he's a question mark because he got injured. So a lot of question marks there.
Yeah, one Andrew Kashner is not going to turn that Baltimore rotation around.
So I know during the spring, during spring training, there's going to be a lot of storylines, but we will definitely go more into depth of each one of these teams. So we'll have, similar to what we did last year, we'll bring on guys that are, you know, very engulfed on each of these teams, whether it's whether they have a podcast for the Orioles or the Red Sox or whomever, or they're a beat writer, and we'll bring them on to get more of a hometown view of these guys as spring training goes on and getting ready for the season. We have a bunch of mailbags we're going to get to, and like we said, we have Brian Hoke spoke with Andrew on this past Friday, so that's the second half of the show. Make sure you tune in. Before we get to the mailbags, we do have to give away a t-shirt winner, because like we said, every week we are giving away a t-shirt to one person who leaves a review on the podcast in iTunes. So if you haven't done that, make sure you go to iTunes, Apple Podcast, and please give us a review. We obviously love 5 stars, and then give us something good in there. Whatever you think, whatever you want to say. If you want to compliment us, I'm always looking for compliments. I will never turn down a compliment. If you want to rib us, that's fine too. 5 stars, whatever you got. And then we're going to pick one every week, and I will send you a code for any t-shirt in the fan shop that your heart desires. So the winner this week was a 5-star review. The caption is "Truly Entertaining" by Escodamas on February 13th. He said, "Very informative podcast with different spectrums of reality. One is realistic and the other is mostly fantasy. You can guess who is who rather easily. Listening to these guys from behind enemy lines in Massachusetts, I've been listening for a year now. I can honestly recommend this podcast to fans of baseball in general. Awesome job, guys. Keep up the good work. W. Esco 787. So, who's who?
I don't know, because we were talking before, we both thought we're the fantasy guy that he's talking about.
Yeah, I was actually, when I told you that I thought he was talking about me as the fantasy guy, I was very surprised that you thought you were the fantasy guy. And I'll give my explanation first. You're on like the more, you know, you're on the more like pessimistic view, right? You're like the guy who's entrenched in that side of it. Although you've become a lot more optimistic over the years, and I'm definitely the bigger optimist of the two. And I think a lot of people can confuse optimism for fantasy, because it's maybe my head is in the clouds on two things. I think it's more of a realistic view leaning towards the optimistic side because I don't like to put myself in the clouds, the negative clouds, like the dark clouds. It's just, there's no room for that in my head right now. So I think that's why I think I'm the fantasy guy.
That makes sense. I guess I was assuming Escudamus was looking at it from your positive attitude. And so he was thinking that you are realistic because you are the positive one and I am the negative one, for lack of a better term. I call it realistic, I guess. So yeah, right. maybe I've just convinced myself. I've turned myself around. And I guess I know who is who at this point. But when we get the DM from Escudamus, maybe he can let us know who he was talking about.
Yeah, and then if anybody else is listening to the show, has got some insight, who you think is fantasy and who you think is realistic, if there is a clear defined line of what we are, I want to hear this too. I want to hear all this feedback. This is all very interesting to me.
It was fun. I like that review though because it got me thinking.
Yeah, so definitely send us a DM on Twitter or shoot us an email. However you want to get a hold of us, just get a hold of us. Somehow prove that it's you. We gave a T-shirt away. I saw that it was ordered last week to Brian McNulty. Is that right?
Yep.
So he got his shirt, or he ordered his shirt. I saw it in the back. He got one of the Modern Day Murderers Row tees. So that will be shipping out soon. When you get that, definitely shoot us a picture of you wearing the shirt so we can tweet it out. But yeah, we're going to do this every single week. So if you have not given us a review, obviously we're super appreciative. It drives us. It definitely helps us grow the show when we have more 5-star reviews and ratings in iTunes. All right, so let's get to the mailbags. The first one is from Patrick Lyons, is at 5280 Ballcast. He says, first time, long time. Odds are against this staff holding up for the season. So what pitchers could the Yankees get in July for their playoff run? And what prospects would you be willing to give up?
Brian and I spoke about the rotation in the segment coming up. And we both agreed that it's a solid rotation. It's not the best rotation, but no team is going to go through the year without injury. You and I, though, were just happy that the five players they had on paper, we were comfortable going into the season like that. Yep. And if in June or July they needed to add somebody, they have the prospects. They have a deep system. They still have a lot of players they could trade for a pitcher if they need it. We didn't need to do that in the winter. I think you and I both were in agreement on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's crazy to me how much indirect disrespect was going towards Jordan Montgomery and the season that he had. I think a lot of people overlook the season that he had and the fact that he was a rookie and really built up a very, very solid rookie year. And, you know, to me, he's only going to build on that. He seems like a smart kid who works hard and is going to build on what he does. So I was happy that they kind of went in with the guys that did and didn't give up a prospect for, you know, at least any of the names that were mentioned. That being said, like you're talking about the system, like we just heard about Justice Sheffield, who is claiming that he feels like he's ready for the major leagues. Like this guy has a lot of confidence. He hasn't pitched in Triple A. I mean, he's going up to Triple A most likely this year, right? He was a Double A. And we're looking for a big year out of him in Triple A. And who knows if there's an injury, which we're all, not that we expect it. It's just, it happens every year. It's baseball. It happens every, it's baseball, Susan. It happens. Injuries happen. When you have guys like CC Sabathia, that are, you know, up there in age, and then, you know, some unknowns with some other guys, as far as longevity or staying healthy for an entire season, you expect that farm system to get worked out a little bit. And Justice Sheffield might be one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm also looking at the outfield spots, the depth in the outfield, like guys like Jake Cave and Billy McKinney. If those guys are having strong seasons at AAA and they don't really have a spot in the majors, those are perfect trade chips.
Yeah, I mean, the outfield is so freaking packed right now with major league talent in the Bronx. Any of those guys in AAA are basically playing for a job somewhere else. I mean, they if they're honest with themselves, they're playing for a job with another team, or, you know, God forbid an injury occur, but that's what's happening.
So I was kind of going around the league and looking at the free agent class for next season to see which guys are in the last years of their deals. And maybe their team is going to be, might not be in playoff contention. And one guy, the Yankees were actually linked to him, Patrick Corbin from Arizona. The Yankees were linked to him in the offseason already. So they've already expressed interest. I'm not really thrilled with that addition, but if they need a back end of the rotation type guy, he might be available in June or July.
Yep, he's definitely again, and that's one of those moves that, you know, it's a depth move almost. I mean, and that's why it was so freaking puzzling to me why there were rumors about Patrick Corbin with the Yankees in the offseason, you know, circling around that fifth spot when we have Jordan Montgomery sitting right there. Like, you can't convince me that Patrick Corbin's better than Jordan Montgomery.
But no. If there's an injury, though, he might be a nice option.
Yeah, that's the thing. If there's an injury, Cole Hamels is another guy that you had on this list, and he's
interesting.
He's one of the more expensive guys, but another guy who's got a lot of postseason experience.
Well, because couldn't you see Texas making the playoffs, but you could also see Texas being in fourth place?
Yes.
So if Texas is in third or fourth place and it's at the trade deadline and they could get some prospects for Cole Hamels, why wouldn't they do that?
It makes a ton of sense. I mean, I think that's if they're not in the playoff hunt, if they are significantly out of it at that point and they don't find themselves, they're going to deal him. It's
right.
It makes a ton of sense. So yeah, I could see that happening. One guy that we just talked about that wasn't on your list, actually. What about the Rays? I mean, the Rays are doing this fire sale. Chris Archer is, if they don't get rid of him now, he's going to be up at the trade deadline. And why? There's really nothing saying that they wouldn't trade him within the division. They're not going to be making any moves towards a competitive team in the next, what, 4 or 5 years minimum. So who cares?
Exactly. They're just going to look for the best prospects. And if the Yankees offer the best package for him, they'll say, you know what? We're not going to be good while Archer is pitching against us anyway. So what's the difference? We might as well just take the best haul.
Yeah. So that's a big guy that I think is going to, he could be probably the biggest haul at the trade deadline if he's still around in Tampa, but he's going to get a lot of people excited.
Can I read this next mailbag question from James? Cause I feel like I should be reading this one.
Yeah, go ahead.
From James Pagno. He says, I feel like the Headley trade is going to hurt this team this season. He could have been useful at the opening at third and was the ultimate team guy.
And such a nice dude. Such a nice guy.
Isn't it insane how far the spectrum swings on Chase Headley?
Well, it's funny because, you know, he changed, I think, a lot of minds, including yours last year in the way that he played and the way that he made himself available to different positions when the Yankees needed him. I mean, he was the ultimate team guy last year. And the fact that the Yankees, I think everybody was a little bit more surprised after the year that he had that he was dumped this year after what we saw last year. And the fact that there was no third baseman that was a shoo-in.
So that's the thing I'm surprised about, is that the Yankees dumped him and then didn't use his money to sign somebody else. That's what I'm surprised about. Now, maybe they add him in the middle of the season and I look like an idiot and Cashman had this grand plan all along. In Cashman, we trust, right?
Exactly.
Like, you're making this T-shirt. Like, we clearly have put our faith that Brian Cashman knows what the hell he is doing. So,
yeah. And that's the thing. Like, they're adding flexibility to have flexibility. I mean, Cashman loves, he obviously feels confident enough in the guys coming up as well. You know, there's been a ton of talk about Gleyber Torres going to second base. Like, that's the obvious choice. And then Miguel Andujar, like, is he ready? Is the glove ready? I think that's the big thing that everybody's going to be circling this spring is everybody has the general consensus is that his bat is ready to go, or at least on the cusp. It's major league ready. But it's the glove. Can he prove that he is a solid contributor, someone that you could depend on at third base defensively? That's the biggest question mark for him right now.
If Headley was still on this team and he was the opening day third baseman, do you think he would be blocking Andujar?
I think to start the season, yeah, that he very well could be blocking Andujar. Yeah.
Yeah, but let's say Headley is struggling. We've seen it before. He gets off to really slow starts. He's hitting like 200 in May with no power. And Andujar's tearing up AAA. Do you think he would block him at that point?
No, I don't think so. I think the Yankees have proved that they would eat the contract. But I guess the fact that that Cashman saw an opportunity to dump that money and give him more flexibility with the team, that he just couldn't pass that up. Because if he's playing that same scenario you just had in his head, and the fact that Headley will be there, well, if Andujar is playing well and Headley is not, then you're eating that $13 million. So he's basically like, I got an opportunity right now to get rid of $13 million off the books, and there's a very good possibility that I'll probably have to eat this next year. Let's just take the money.
And San Diego took it all, right?
Yeah.
They took all the money?
Yeah, yeah. I think that was it. And Brian Mitchell.
Right.
I'm glad that I don't have to talk about Brian Mitchell being a starter or a reliever again this year. So that, it's been like 5 years.
He's got the tools. He's got the stuff.
He's a toolsy guy. Turf toe derailed him for sure. All right. So next one is from Jay Hyatt at Jay Hyatt with an ETT on Twitter. He says, should the Yankees look to add Tim Lincecum? He was clocking at 90 to 93 on his showcase. I don't care where he's clocking. I really don't.
We mocked this like 3-4 weeks ago. We mocked the Tim Lincecum was trying to make a comeback story.
I got guys that I know from high school who can go out and throw 90 to 93. I mean, they're not gonna be able to pick their arm up, but they can get the velocity there. You know what I mean? Like, velocity doesn't mean jack shit to me. It doesn't, especially for a guy like Tim Lincecum.
You know what? Screw it. Why not sign Tim Lincecum? Honestly, what is the downside to signing Lincecum? It's going to be a minor league prove me contract. So he comes into spring training and he probably will get shelled, and then you move on. Like, but what could possibly be the downside?
Because he might get, maybe he's looking for some dumbass organization to give him a very low major league offer.
Fine, then let a dumb organization do that. That doesn't have to be the Yankees.
I don't think the Yankees are even going to be able to get in there. Whatever, it doesn't matter. I don't even know why we're talking about this. In all seriousness, the guy is washed up.
Because he's ripped.
Done.
All reports got. Lincecum
he's skinny.
Is ripped now.
He's skinny, and you just see more muscles. There's a difference.
Did I call him? I believe I used the analogy that it was like a crackhead just did bicep curls for a couple hours.
Yeah. So he was like, his veins were popping out. Like he looked swole. But he's just skinny. It's a huge difference. I'm anti Tim Lincecum.
The freak. Bring the freak in.
All right. Next one is from Scott in Ottawa, if you want to grab that one.
Scott in Ottawa says, love the show. Thanks for bringing it each week. While the hockey and basketball teams I follow are complete trash. I asked a similar question to this back on episode 89. So Scott is one of our listeners from way back. Number one, what winter Olympic sport do you like to watch the most? And number two, what winter Olympic sport would you do best at if you had to compete? And he says, by the way, in episode 89, Andrew picked the very manly sport of speed walking to compete in the summer Olympics. And my girlfriend is laughing in my face as I just read that.
Speed walking is... Why do you think
if you gave me a year to train, I could be an Olympic speed walker.
Yeah. Why do you think you'd be so good at speed walking?
Because I have really long legs.
Yep.
And I just need the cardiovascular stamina, but I feel like I could work my way up to that.
Have you seen the funkiness in the walk though? Like I feel like you need some like serious hip flexibility.
Yeah, and some of them shit themselves, but still go at it.
So do you have the ability? Can you actually, would you be able to shit? Would you be committed enough to shit yourself while you're doing an Olympic sport, while you're on television? Yeah. Look, you're going for the bronze medal, not the silver or the gold. They've already crossed, but you're in like a walk for walk race with the next guy for the bronze medal. So it's a matter of medaling or not medaling. And you have to take a giant shit and you're on TV prime time speed walking. Do you shit yourself?
Absolutely. If it's going to make me that much lighter and give me if it's going to give me that step.
You're wearing white shorts. Do you shit yourself?
Why am I wearing?
I don't know, but you
white
are.
Shorts, whatever. If I'm wearing. Yeah, maybe, you know what? Maybe I prepare for this and I wear an adult diaper.
No, you're not. It's white shorts. You didn't prepare for it. It's just, this is what happens.
What did I have for dinner the night before?
All right. So the Winter Olympics, what spot? We're talking about sports that we like to watch the most. I'm a big fan of the skiing. Like I think some of the new skiing events are pretty crazy that they're doing all these, like all the tricks, the freestyle stuff is insane to me what they can do on skis. So those guys are super impressive. And then I also like watching the the bobsled and the skeleton. I think that stuff is crazy.
The best Winter Olympic sport to watch is short track speed skating because there is always a fall. It's like 10 guys out there on this little loop of a track all going at it. It's really actually very exciting.
I don't understand how there are not more crashes in that sport. There are tight. I know, but
do
like
you remember?
Didn't Ono get like slashed in the face?
I believe, yeah. But do you remember it was either last Olympics or two Olympics ago? Some guy was in last place and in the entire field in front of him wiped out and he ended up winning because everyone fell.
Yeah, that's crazy. It makes me dizzy and I want to throw up when I'm watching it. That's the one thing. The sport that I think I would, if I were to compete and I were to, there's two answers. One obvious answer is curling. I feel like I could be a very, very solid curler. I'm good at, I'm good at shuffleboard. So I've gone to, you know, I used to, as a kid, I went to Florida, during the summers and would visit my great aunt and uncle. And there was a shuffleboard court there and I would just whoop some ass. I would go in there and hustle some grandpas and some grandmas. I feel like I'd be good at that. And then the second one I'd like to try, I feel like if I tried it, is the skeleton. I think it looks like so much fun. It looks a little crazy, but it looks fun.
Yeah, that's crazy. You don't want to do doubles luge with me?
I'll do luge. Yeah, I think luge is a similar effect. I'd do that too.
Have you seen the doubles luge though? It's just one guy laying on top of the other.
Oh, the doubles luge. I'm thinking of bobsled. No, I don't want to do the luge. I'll do the bobsled.
We can start a doubles bobsled team. Bronx Pinstripe Show. We can put the logo right on the side. It's perfect.
Beautiful. I love it.
Thanks for the question, Scott, and I appreciate the callback from episode 89.
All right. The next one is from Evan Pareka, and he says, this question is for Scott. He says, I need an honest opinion here. As we know, Andrew is a Patriots fan. Does this impact your opinion of his Yankees takes? Personally, as a Jets fan who went to college in Boston, it makes me appreciate his opinion about 25% less than yours. Than your own. He says, I just can't get the memory of crappy drunk Pats Sox fans incoherently yelling goat at the mere sight and mention of Tom Brady.
So have you noticed that over the last couple of weeks as the playoff run for the NFL went on, that it seemed like a lot more listeners picked up on the fact that I am a Patriots fan? I think because we stopped talking football about a year and a half ago that a lot of our new listeners didn't realize that.
Yeah, so in the beginning we would do in the offseason when we had no idea what we were going to talk about, we did like what 15 minutes or so of football and, I don't know, we were kind of forcing that as well. We just, neither one of us really cared as much. So we started going, all Yankees. I don't think they do. I think it's one of your like in the closet skeletons. And
it's just because it's a New York Boston thing. If I was a 100%. Yankees fan and a Minnesota Vikings fan,
nobody would give a crap.
Right. It's the Yankees. And it's because geography, where I grew up, Rhode Island. It's just how it was. I'm a Yankees fan because my dad is a Yankees fan. My dad never really influenced me that much on football. So I ended up being a Patriots fan because all my friends, when they were 9 years old, we were Patriots fans. So I just went with my friends at that point. I understand it makes me kind of an asshole. I'm probably the biggest asshole sports fan out there because the Yankees and the Patriots have been the two most successful franchises in their respective sports for the last 30 years.
That's the thing. So it looks suspicious. It does look suspicious. It looks suspicious. Do I value your opinion less because of that? My honest answer here is no, I don't, because I usually don't think about it. But I must say, during football season, you annoy me more. It creeps up into the, I think, conversation a lot more about the Patriots. And I'm just so salty about it because I'm a Jets fan also. And like, I picked the wrong team. I would have had championships if I was a Giants fan, but I'm not. For whatever reason, I picked the Jets. It was a stupid decision. I have to live with it for the rest of my life. Like I've said, I'm going to give my son the option to not be a Jets fan. I'm not going to push that on him to save him. I really think it's important for me to do for his livelihood as a football fan. But it doesn't make me affect your opinion, if I'm being honest.
Well, I appreciate that. That's a good thing, considering we have a podcast dedicated to the New York Yankees.
Right. And I actually did go to college with a bunch of guys from like the Boston area. So there was a lot. I had a lot of back and forth with Patriots fans and Red Sox fans, like constantly. Like it would get annoying to other people, and they would basically, we were told to, you know, just stop arguing constantly. So I've had that back and forth, and I'm almost numb to it a little bit.
Well, I hope for Evan's sake that he can get over the fact. Maybe I'll win him back with my Yankees takes this year.
If it makes everybody feel a little bit better, you were not really engaged with the Patriots season really at all this year.
No, I mean I'm definitely more passive about the Patriots than I am the Yankees. Obviously, if you give me one game, one like key game, 2 out of 3 win series against the Red Sox in July for the Yankees versus like a Patriots big win, give me the Yankees win. That's just, I'm Yankees 99%.
All right. That's good to hear. I'm glad we cleared that up. So the last one is something you found. So why don't you read this?
Yeah. So Mickey Callaway, the new manager of the Mets, had just an absolute gold comment. And it really struck a chord with us, I think, because he said, dry humping guys is something I feel strongly about. He was referring to a situation where a reliever warms up and then does not get into the game. That's a lot of wear and tear that is endless if I haven't prepared the right way. That will happen. I have to make a decision with good timing so the game doesn't speed up on us and we don't have somebody ready. So Mickey Callaway talking about bee whips, but he's calling it dry humping, guys.
Okay, so when you first read that and you're like, yeah, this is something that we're definitely behind, and then you start off reading dry humping guys is something I feel strongly about. The quote is utterly ridiculous. It's I can't believe it. Someone actually said this with, you know, and being dead serious about it and didn't actually mm-hmm. think that it would be, you know, written all over the place and tweeted all over the place. Yeah. I guess he's a dude that doesn't care much about it. He's more of an outspoken guy, but I mean, the choice of wordings is pretty hysterical, I think, in the way that he goes about the B-whips. But yeah, B-whips, that was something that we've been talking about. We need this. It's one of those stats that needs to be added to the new analytics. Is B-whips is the bullpen warm-up pitches. We are of the opinion that it has ruined Dellin Betances and it's Joe Girardi's fault.
Well, I guess Joe Girardi just loved dry humping Dellin Betances.
All right, so that is going to do it for us for the first half of the show. Make sure that you stay tuned. Andrew and Brian Hoke's conversation they had from this past Friday, definitely tune in for that. Andrew, do you have any last words for this week?
No, I appreciate you guys. If the sound wasn't the best, I appreciate you guys listening. We love all the reviews that are coming in, so keep it up.
All right, guys, before the conversation with Brian Hoke, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor we have for the show, Black Buffalo. There is nothing more American than baseball and dip. I'm a guy that likes to throw a dip in while I'm watching a game. It's just one of those things I've done while I go to a game. And I have tried Black Buffalo recently, and it's actually really good stuff. It's a tobacco-free alternative dip that delivers the same experience as traditional smokeless tobaccos, with just without any tobacco leaf or stem. The taste, the texture, the dark, rich color, and yeah, the nicotine. So you can keep on that ritual, but ditch the tobacco. Black Buffalo makes a tobacco-free long cut and also pouches in wintergreen, mint, and straight. Black Buffalo sells 2 packs. They sell 5 packs. And you can get their merchandise exclusively on their website with free shipping. Another cool thing about the company is they are a proud sponsor of the nonprofit that's dedicated to helping special operations forces transition out of the military and into the private sector, something that's very awesome and we love. So go to blackbuffalo.com, use code Bronx50 for 50% off your first order. That's blackbuffalo.com, use code Bronx50 for 50% off your first order. Here's our conversation with Brian Hoke. Diesel, I show people, they know every single thing that he do, it be big daddy cool. These actors faking like they stunting, I say you airball, I go Nancy Reagan for nothing, which means I dare y'all to muzzle what my tongue do. My crew is painting pictures till they love you, take a trip through my freedom. Joining us on the podcast now is Brian Hoke of MLB.com, and he covers the Yankees. I'm sure you guys follow him on Twitter and all that good stuff. Brian, how's it going?
Going really well. It's about 85 and sunny down here in Florida, so don't be too jealous, but it's been a lot of fun. About ready to get started with camp for real, and team looks pretty good, so lots to be excited about.
Well, it's about 55 degrees today in New York City. It kind of got me excited for, like, it's spring is going to arrive, but I know it's just teasing, and we'll get a snowstorm sooner or later. But, yeah, you mentioned everyone's excited down there. What's the atmosphere like as people enter camp?
I think there's just a really positive vibe. You're seeing it with the players. I was talking to David Robertson today. He said that seems to him like even some of the media members always have a smile on their face. I think that it's just spring training is always a time for optimism, but especially when your team went to the American League Championship Series, was one win away from going to the World Series, I think that there's obviously a lot for Yankee fans and the Yankees players to be positive about here. And then you put the cherry on top by trading for Giancarlo Stanton in December. And I don't see why anybody wouldn't be looking forward to seeing what this team can do on the field. So it's one thing to do it on paper, another thing to do it between the white lines, of course. But, you know, at this time of year when every team is looking for reasons to be positive and optimistic, I think the Yankees have more reasons than most.
Yeah, how does it rank as far as teams that you've covered? I believe you started covering the team in 2009, right? That's actually kind of a similar offseason where they added Sabathia and Teixeira and Burnett, and it was World Series or bust that year. I'm not quite sure it's World Series or bust this year, but it's on a lot of people's minds with how things ended.
No, for sure. 07 was my first year, so I saw the end of the Joe Torre era, the beginning of Joe Girardi, closing of the old stadium, opening a new one, all that good stuff. But yeah, I would say it's on par with 09. I think that there was so much anticipation that year with the opening of the new stadium. They went out and spent $500 million on the guys you mentioned. I think that there was a vibe that if the Yankees didn't win the World Series that year, it was going to be a disappointment. And I am getting a lot of that same vibe here. I think that you hear them talking about how they have the target on their back now, and they snuck up on a lot of people last year. People were picking them to be fourth or fifth in the American League East. You know, a lot of people were saying that team was not going to finish 500. They surprised a lot of people last year. I don't think they're going to surprise anybody this year. They're coming in. People are looking at this team to make a lot of noise, and I think that if they don't go to the playoffs and have a very deep run, it's going to be a disappointment for a lot of people.
Did anyone show up to camp out of shape? I'm always curious about that.
I haven't seen anybody out of shape. I think what you're seeing is guys who are in better shape than they were at the end of last season, which I think is impressive considering how late the year went. There's been a lot of talk about how Gary Sanchez is trimmed down. He says he hasn't lost any weight, but he looks trimmer to me on the eye test, which a lot of times means that a guy has put on a little muscle or maybe firmed up something that needed some firming up. I think that the Yankees talked a lot about how Sanchez was having trouble blocking balls last year because he was too bulky. I think that he's corrected that issue, and we'll see how the ball blocking goes. And Dellin Betances came in about 14, 15 pounds lighter, and he says that he's hoping that that can help him repeat his delivery a little more consistently. So you hear a lot of these stories this time of year. I think that guys do their off-season training. They eat right over the off-season. The test is, can it hold up to a 162-game schedule, a 180-day grind? And for some guys, it does. Some guys, it doesn't. But spring training is obviously always a time. The joke is he's in the best shape of his life. Well, there's a lot of guys in the Yankee clubhouse who I think could make a run at that.
Yeah, actually, Sanchez and Dellin Betances were two guys I was going to ask you about. I think specifically because of their relationship with Girardi and what a lot of what was written about those relationships, but especially Sanchez with the whole getting benched briefly and all that type of stuff. What did you see on that relationship, and what do you think it's is that a priority for Aaron Boone going forward, those two guys specifically?
Well, it's definitely a priority for Boone. He said that with Sanchez. He went to New York during the offseason. They met up. They had dinner. It's kind of building a relationship, and I think that's important for any manager to have a good relationship with his starting catcher. He's obviously going to be the conduit between the pitching staff during a game. And I think that having a good line of communication between your starting catcher and your manager is crucial. As far as Sanchez and Girardi, I thought that there were signs of friction at times. Obviously, you're talking about August when he benched him and said his defense has to improve. Bottom line, he's late getting down to block balls. And I thought that was very out of character for Girardi. I thought that at the time. And especially after they parted ways with Joe, and you're hearing Brian Cashman talk about communication and connectivity was the reason they couldn't keep Joe Girardi around. And I think that's got to be exhibit A as far as something they were looking to avoid or improve upon. Now, to Sanchez's credit, he said all the right things. He said that he liked Girardi as a manager, and he thought Girardi was really trying to help him be a better catcher. And that probably is true. I think that it benefited everybody for Gary Sanchez's ball blocking to improve. And it really did. If you look at the numbers after that point, the amount of wild pitches and pass balls went down after August. Obviously he had some issues in the postseason, but I think that it was in everybody's best interest for a positive relationship. And that's obviously something that that Aaron Boone is trying to build now with Gary Sanchez. And so far, they seem to be off to a good start.
Yeah, before they traded for Stanton, I thought maybe both Judge and Sanchez would get more time at DH in 2018. Do you think that's changed at all with the addition of Stanton?
I think it has. I think that they're all going to see time there rotating, but I think that it's a good problem to have. How do you fit these guys in? But they're going to have to fit Sanchez at DH a little bit. They're going to have to use Stanton and Judge there too, and I don't think it's going to hurt either one of those guys to get some innings off of their feet. But Boone has talked about liking it as an idea of a way that he can give Sanchez a half day. You get him out from behind the plate, you get him his four or five at bats, and he doesn't have to get beat up with foul tips back there and blocking balls. So I think that's an important thing for the Yankees to utilize. And I think it's important with Judge too. I mean, I know there's a temptation to run that guy out there 162 games and he's going to play full throttle the whole time. But what you're hearing him say now about how he was banged up and he was playing at 80% a lot of the year, if you can keep that guy closer to 90% rather than 80 or 75%, I mean, imagine the numbers he can put up. So I think it's huge for all those guys to rest, and you never want to give those guys a day off. So the DH spot is going to be huge for that.
Judge was talking about in his press conference the other day that it pretty much his shoulder issue started after the All-Star break. And everyone just immediately thinks of the Home Run Derby. Everyone was joking, mocking that the Home Run Derby injured Aaron Judge. But I think there might actually be some truth to that now.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that, you know, he was very careful not to mention the Home Run Derby as a problem, but he did mention taking a lot of swings. And I had heard rumblings that the shoulder actually started before that. So let's say that it did. Does participating in the Home Run Derby when you already are managing something in your shoulder, is that the smartest thing to do? He obviously wanted to participate in it. MLB wanted him to participate in it. He did pretty good. He did pretty well. I think that if you're an injured player, it's hard to put on the show that he did. So could it have exacerbated it? Maybe. Maybe it aggravated something, and then he had to deal with it a little bit more in the second half. We'll never really know. I think only Aaron knows that, and maybe the Yankees training staff, but possibly not even them. I think that Aaron played his cards very close to the vest. And look, he came back in September. His best month was in September, so how bad could it really have been? And he claims that he did not get a cortisone injection. So you can go back and trace the entire path of Aaron Judge's season. Bottom line, it turned out to be a really, really incredible rookie season, one that I don't think any of us have ever seen anything like. And for him to have been doing it while managing injury, I think it makes it all the more incredible. I think the true test will be this July in D.C. MLB is obviously going to ask him to participate again as the defending home run champion. Is there any way that he even gets anywhere near that home run derby? And I guess it remains to be seen. I'll be curious to see how he reacts, but I don't think anyone would fault him for sitting it out.
Yeah, it was certainly a good career move for him. He's on the cover of MLB The Show and the most popular player on the most popular team now, so everything worked out well for him. Getting back to Boone, I think one of the biggest things, the reason he's the Yankees manager, is relationships. They wanted him to be able to relate to the guys in the clubhouse. But apart from that, on the field, bullpen management, all that kind of stuff, how do you think the adjustment's going to be for him?
I think it'll be an adjustment process. I think there will be things he'll have to pick up on and the speed of the game. I think, you know, it looks pretty easy when you're up in the press box or the broadcast booth, but I think once you get down there to field level, the speed of the game and the speed with which decisions need to be made, it's really accelerated. And there's really no test to do that. I mean, he'll try to do that a little bit in Grapefruit League games, but it's not the same. You're not playing matchups in the late innings, and you're not really trying to think two or three innings ahead. You're just trying to make sure your guys get four or five innings and get out of there healthy. So I think that it's hard to simulate a lot of the things that Aaron is going to have to learn with on the fly in March and April when opening day happens and the team goes north. But he's not the first guy to do this. You know, you've seen a trend of recent managers who have not spent a whole lot of time in minor league dugouts. And it used to be that you'd have to go down and manage an A ball and double A to even get a shot at being in the big leagues. And that's not the case anymore. So I think he can make up that learning curve. He's been around the game. He comes from a baseball family. Aaron said at his press conference, he's been preparing for this since he was 3 or 4 years old. And maybe that's true, but I think that there's certainly a lot of the nuances of the game that he is going to hit the ground running with. And the other things he can pick up pretty easily. But I think he'll lean on Larry Rothschild, who's managing the big leagues, for some of the stuff, particularly on the pitching side. And the rest of it, I think, should come rather intuitively to him.
I think bullpen management is something that is one of the areas a manager has the biggest impact on. I thought Girardi, sometimes I thought he would overuse Betances, maybe get him up too many times, and maybe that's why we saw Betances fade down the stretch. But last year that wasn't the case because Betances, I think, threw his least amount of innings of his career last year. So
Right.
So what is going on with Betances? Why does he every September lose it?
I don't know. If you had the answer, I think that the Yankees would probably pay you a lot of money to fix it. But I think that overuse has been an issue with him, and not necessarily in 2017. 2017, he wasn't throwing his fastball for strikes, and that really was so important for him. It's important for any pitcher, but especially for him. I think that if you go back and look through his numbers, the problem started the first week of September and continued into the postseason, obviously. And he had flashes where he was getting by without it, but it's so difficult for a pitcher to have any kind of level of sustained success when you can't do something as simple as throw a fastball for a strike. And that goes back to what we're talking about with his mechanics being out of whack. He thought that he was a little too heavy at the end of last year. I believe he said he finished the year about 280. He's down to about 264 now. Maybe that helps. Maybe that helps him repeat the delivery better. That's closer to the weight that he was when he was excellent. But you're still talking about a guy who has been on four straight All-Star teams here. He's dominant. He can get, if his fastball and curveball are good enough, this is a guy who no team wants to see in the late innings. So, you know, Aaron Boone has said that Betances is going to be a huge part of what the Yankees are able to do this year. I think that if you can cure that September bugaboo that has been bothering him, that will go a long way. But I think the most important thing is get him back on the mound, get his confidence right. You know, Girardi tried to do it a couple times, even in the playoffs, and brought him into games where he couldn't get anybody out. But that tells you how important he is to what the Yankees need to do. The fact that Girardi was willing to bring him into those postseason games, I think that Aaron Boone is going to really depress the gas pedal on him and try to get him in big spots as well.
So you said he gained weight throughout the season last year, and now he cut it in the offseason. Did he go on the vegan CC diet or something?
No, as far as I know, he hired a nutritionist and was working out down in the Dominican Republic. So, and by the way, CC is not sticking to that vegan diet. That is a thing of the past already. So
shocker.
He gave it a shot. I think his wife pushed him to do it, and he had about a 20-day run on it. Nice little cleanse there. That's a good run. That's a longer run than I've had on a vegan diet. But yeah. I think that over the course of a major league season with the travel and the late nights these guys do, it would be kind of tough to keep up with that. And so that's a thing of the past, but hopefully it pays dividends for both those guys, because that's not easy.
Yeah, I think CC said that he's not going to make it through the season, and you're saying he made it 20 days. I think he was like, yeah, I'm going to Kansas City. I'm getting barbecue.
Me too. I'll be doing that too. So vegan was not a consideration.
Are you sad the Yankees didn't bring back Todd Frazier, the clubhouse guy? Everybody seemed to love him.
Great quote. I think the writers were sad that he's not coming back, but I understand where they're coming from there. I thought from the beginning of the offseason that he made a whole lot of sense for the Mets. I'm not surprised that he wound up there, being obviously a New Jersey guy. We've talked that to death, and he obviously wanted to stay close to home, and that was a perfect fit for him. So I think that thumbs down moves across borough lines. We'll see if they keep that up over there. But I really thought... Yeah, it could be. I guess it is. I really thought that Miguel Andujar was going to be the front runner coming in at third base. I think that he showed in a very small sample why the Yankees are excited about his bat. The defense has been improving. It's something he's worked really hard on. And I think the Yankees were intent on giving a shot to these young kids. And particularly in the case of Andujar at third base, I think that he's got to be the guy as you're looking to Grapefruit League games here. He's certainly somebody that I think the Yankees would like to plug in there, and it really helps them stay under the luxury tax threshold as well, and gives them a lot of money to play with. And so I think they're going to come in under 197, and with the bats they have, Andujar doesn't have to be great. If he's okay to good, that's good enough.
I think I agree with you that it provides them flexibility salary-wise, and also to play Andujar and Gleyber Torres. Do you think, though, the Yankees tried to get Frazier on a one-year deal and he just wasn't having it? He wanted 2 years?
I don't know that for a fact, but it wouldn't shock me if they offered that or maybe one and an option. But I could see that being realistic. I think that the Yankees wanted Frazier back at some price. They just weren't willing to go that length. And that obviously lends to the offseason next year when Manny Machado is going to be out there. So do they want to tie themselves down to a guy like Todd Frazier, who let's be honest, is a veteran guy, and he's been around the game, but I think that his best days are probably behind him when they have Machado and they have Andujar knocking on the door here ready for 2018. So I think you give Andujar a shot to sink or swim this year, and then if it doesn't work out that way, then maybe you go spend a whole lot of money on Machado next year. I think that had to be part of the thought process going into the winter.
I want to talk about the rotation. So when we had you on the podcast last summer, we asked you if Tanaka opts out, what are the Yankees going to do? And keep in mind, this was when he was struggling. You said you didn't think the Yankees would go after him in free agency. Turns out he didn't opt out, and it actually, he made the right decision with the way the free agent market has gone. But a couple questions. Are the Yankees happy he did not opt out?
I think they have to be. I think that you've got I think the way that he finished the year, it gives you confidence that he can pick up where he left off. His last regular season start was really great. He's striking out a ton of Blue Jays there. And then I think he went on the postseason and really showed the ability to raise his game to the next level. So was he holding something back for the end? I think that's certainly possible. Or did he just settle into a good groove? Either way, I think that you're looking at a guy who has proven he can pitch with the injury he has. The money's already spent, so there's nothing you can really worry about that. I think that if Tanaka had opted out and that salary came off the books, I don't think the Yankees would have gone after him very hard. Certainly not at a increased rate or an extension, but considering that the deal has been signed already, that's a solid guy you can plug in as your number two. Severino's going to be your ace. You got Sonny Gray. You've got CeCe Sabathia, Jordan Montgomery in that rotation. That's a pretty good starting five, and it's the same starting five that got them within one win of the World Series last year. So I think the Yankees have to feel pretty good having Tanaka back. It certainly beats the alternative, and as you see how difficult it's been to find starting pitching out there, Brian Cashman's been trying all offseason to do it. If they had another vacancy outside of having to re-sign CeCe Sabathia, I think that would have made the challenge twice as hard.
I agree with you. I think the rotation's pretty good. It's not the best rotation in the league, but it's good. And it's actually the leaders in that rotation are pretty young, which is also a positive. We all know someone's going to get injured. Not everyone's going to make 30 starts, so we know that. But were you surprised at how hard or how much interest they showed in guys like Garrett Cole, Yu Darvish, or any other starting pitcher? Because they do have, on paper, five guys to start the season.
Yeah, I'm not, especially in the case of Cole. I think that they really wanted to get him and just obviously weren't willing to give up Andujar and Clint Frazier. I think that Clint Frazier was available to Pittsburgh if they'd wanted to do that. No, I'm not surprised. I think that there's some questions about how Severino reacts after the increase in his workload, if there's going to be some kind of hangover there. Jordan Montgomery was pretty good, very good for a rookie, but now he's got a sophomore season coming up, and our hitter's going to adjust to him. How does he adjust back to that? I think there's some significant questions, and as you mentioned, a team can't really go in thinking they're going to have only five starting pitchers for the year. I think that Larry Rothschild said last week, you're lucky if you get under 10. So you've got to have those solid choices, and they've got guys. That's why you got Chad Green coming into camp as a starter, and you've got Adam Warren who's done it, and Luis Sessa is going to be preparing as a starter, and behind that you've got Chance Adams and Justice Sheffield. And so there are guys who can come up and make starts for this team, but if you can plug in a Garrett Cole, especially dealing from a area of strength where you've got now five outfielders ahead of Clint Frazier, then I think you have to do that. Unfortunately for the Yankees, the Astros came up with the offer that the Pirates like better. So they're comfortable where they are, the Yankees are, but I think they would still add if they could.
Chad Green, I think, is really interesting because he prepared all offseason to be a starter. He's going to come into spring as a starter, like you just said. Is there a real competition between maybe him and Montgomery for the fifth spot?
I guess we'll see, but in my mind, and I think in Chad Green's mind too, if you gave him some truth serum, he expects to be back in the bullpen, and so does Warren. So I think that those guys have a pretty good idea of where they're going to go. Chad Green, it was not that he was a failed starter. In a lot of cases like this, you look at a guy and he fails in a rotation and he has to move to the bullpen out of necessity. That wasn't really the case. The case was they needed him in the bullpen. He was excellent there, and there was no reason to move him out. So I think that it's easier to prepare as a starter and transition to relief than to go the other way. So I think that's what they're going to do with Chad Green. And, you know, if two guys get hurt in spring training, maybe you're forced into a situation where you have to put Chad Green in your rotation and start the year. But I think that the Yankees would much prefer to have that elite bullpen, and it really is an elite bullpen. You have a guy like Green who can go multiple innings. He's so valuable there in the back end, and it really reduces the strain on that rotation that we're talking about as not the best. I mean, it's okay, but it's not the best rotation in the league. And if you can get five innings out of those guys and hand it off to the bullpen, you should be okay more nights than not.
They handled Green very carefully. I don't think they used him on back-to-back nights. I mean, you might know if they did, if there was one instance, but it certainly was something they tried to avoid. So I don't know if they would. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they would mess around with him and put him as a starter and then flip him back to the bullpen. I'm thinking of the Jabba rules and how much that blew up in everyone's face a few years ago. So I think once he's in the bullpen, I don't see him moving back. I could see them moving Warren back. He's done it before. He's flip-flopped before. But Chad Green, I just don't see him flip-flopping.
Yeah, I would agree. At least not in mid-season. I think that, you know, maybe at this point next year, we're talking about Chad Green as a starter again. And it could be possible, depending on what the team needs. But I really do think that Green's going to open the year in the bullpen. He was too good not to. They're going to give him a look as a starter. And the thing is with these guys, I mean, they pitch pretty similarly out of the bullpen as they would as a starter. So you're using all your pitches, but I think that in Green's case, he's so dominant and so many strikeouts. I mean, that was a really special year. I mean, a lot of people were comparing it to Mariano in 96. And when you're making those kind of comparisons, I think that's really tough to take that out of your bullpen and stick in the rotation.
I also read something that Justice Sheffield said he felt he's pro ready. I don't think he has a shot at the rotation, at least to start the season, but do you think we'll see him mid-season maybe?
I think it's possible. I think that Chance Adams would be the first guy to come up. He would probably come up ahead of Sheffield, but I think that Sheffield showed some signs of progress last year. You know, he had an oblique injury at AA that sidelined him for a little bit, but he was able to come back and pitch well in the Arizona Fall League. And I think that he's showing people why they're so excited about him. I think off the top of my head, I believe he was limited to only 17 starts last year at Trenton. So he missed a good chunk of the year. That's important development time. And I don't think he would make the jump right to the majors. But I think that if he pitches well at AAA and if there's a need at the big league level, he could certainly make his debut at some point in 2018. But I think that for the Yankees' purposes, they're looking at Sheffield more for 2019. Chance Adams would be your guy for 2018.
All right, before we wrap up, I want to mention your book, which I'm sure what you were spending your entire winter on. No off season for you, right?
Thank you. Yes. Very busy, a fun project to work on, The Baby Bombers. And we started that sometime in late August, early September. So it was a quick turnaround there to turn it into a book. But basically, and I'll give you a quick rundown on the book. It's how the Derek Jeter Yankees became the Aaron Judge Yankees. And so we go back to 2014. That's how we start the book and kind of take you through it step by step on how Brian Cashman and his lieutenants and everybody in the front office and the organization kind of looked at the end of this dynasty and decided, how are we going to rebound here and create a new dynasty and a team that people are really excited about, and breaking down, going up behind the scenes with a lot of the decisions that were made, starting with the Didi Gregorius trade. And we take you to high school and college with guys like Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez, Luis Severino, Greg Bird, where these guys came from, how they became Yankees, what they're made of, who they are off the field, on the field, and all that good stuff. So it was a lot of fun to really kind of take a trip back and flesh out what was really a very fun 2017 season. I think that people were obviously excited by these guys. They loved watching them play. And I think that whether you watched every single game of the 2017 season or you only turn them on once in a while, you're going to pick up this book and find out something new that you didn't know about these guys, and really just enjoy the season that's coming up, because we're seeing the beginning of something special here.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly for you. You said you started the book in August?
Yeah, somebody, I guess we started talking about it after the home run derby. And it was initially going to be an exploration of Judge and this rookie season and who this guy is, this superstar in pinstripes. But I figured there was more of a story to tell here. And so it evolved into more of a Baby Bombers, where these guys all came from as a team. And I thought that that was a better way to explore it. And so, yeah, this came together definitely after the All-Star break. And I started gathering interviews with as many people as I could in the last couple months of the season. And then obviously the team went on to the postseason, and we continued building on the book from there. And so I think that we finally put it to bed in late January, and it was after the Stanton trade, so we were able to work all that in, and the managerial change and Aaron Boone. So this is a pretty up-to-date chronology of where the Yankees are as they head into the 2018 season, and hopefully the fans like it a lot.
And it just goes to show you how fast the turnaround, if you want to call it a turnaround, happened.
It really did. You know, hey, we're talking about the Jeter's last game in 2015, and, you know, the trade deadline in 2016, the sell-off where Brian Cashman is going to Hal Steinbrenner and saying this team is not good enough to win the World Series. And I think what we should do is sell off some of our higher price or more available assets, guys like Andrew Miller and Carlos Beltran, and trade them in for guys who can help us win down the road. And this really did happen ahead of schedule. You know, 2017 was a year that, you know, as we talk about in the book, there were people coming in saying the Yankees are going to win 79, 80 games in 2017. It's going to be a rebuilding year. And it turned out to not be that at all. And a lot of it was Aaron Judge exploding and being the best player on the planet in April and having a sensational year. But it wasn't all Judge. And you guys know that as well as I do. A lot of things had to go right for that team to go to the postseason and make the kind of noise that they did in 2017. But now that they were there and got a taste of it, I really do think 5 years from now, we're going to look back and say the 2017 team might have been the weakest of the group. I think that they're poised to do great things in 18, 19, and beyond. And that all comes back to how do you build a dynasty? And I think that you're seeing the very beginning of stages of one right here.
Good stuff, Brian. Thanks for joining the show.
All right, you got it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.